Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From the kitchen of the cabin,
it's the Five Games for Doomsday News
with Ben and Steve.
Anyway, so, do you know what's great about this news show, Steve?
Is this the news show? I never really know what we're doing.
Yeah, it's the news show.
The news show, which is different from other types of shows that we do.
Hey, I've got a couple of interviews here coming live from Porto Airport.
How come you never let me do the interviewing?
Because,
I mean, you just ask people, like, how they're feeling and that, right?
You, like, have a full-time job, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to interview some board game publisher at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Let me be clear. I do not want to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you why I don't do it. Like, this is a different question. I'm asking you why you don't ever have me do it or why you never ask me to do it.
Because...
I'm not saying I want to do it.
You know, you're on bits. You're on bits. You're not taking over the fucking show.
Anyone out there who wants to do a podcast, you need to do it the way I do it. You're here for the lulls. You're here for the bits. You don't do any of the work. You have a creative genius like Ben in charge.
Genius is the word.
I mean, sorry, you have a creative genius or Ben in charge.
Right, exactly.
And you get to have, like I said, in your fifth anniversary show, all of the fun, none of the agony.
Exactly. So So we're sat in the Surveyaria in Porto Airport.
I think the J is like
Jaria.
Surveyaria.
Something like that.
Do you have any like Brazilian or Portuguese listeners
sure
or patrons?
At Five Games for Doomsday, correct our pronunciation on Surveyaria.
Is this for the main feed?
Yes, it's the news show.
Oh, the whole world will hear this.
You have no idea what the structure of this podcast is, do you?
I don't really remember from recording to recording, but I know that Portuguese is a major world language, so
exactly.
Somebody out there
Someone's gotta know
how to pronounce Surveyaria.
And we're looking over at the Remova shop. And Remova, the famous German suitcase brand.
Yep.
And even the plastic ones are like 700 quid, Steve.
I don't understand that at all. I mean, it must be like some super durable plastic.
I mean, you've got a Remova suitcase. Quick, just in case Remova want to sponsor the show.
Yeah.
Then I'd get a free suitcase out of it.
Yep.
I mean, tell us about your Remova suitcase.
Well, Ben, a friend of mine bought a Remova suitcase a couple years ago.
And you were fucking crushingly jealous.
I didn't really know about them because I don't traffic in expensive luggage. I generally buy the cheapest possible suitcase I can find and use it until it falls apart. He taught me that there's a better way, and that's to buy the best possible suitcase that you can buy once and then use it for the rest of your life. Let it get dinged up and damaged. Put stickers on it. It adds to the character.
You're not putting stickers on your fucking suitcase.
No, not a chance. He is. Everywhere he goes. I'm saying you can. I'm not going to.
I can't. You know why?
Why?
I'm not spending that much money on a fucking suitcase.
Not yet. But when this podcast finally explodes
after...
You're going straight to the Remova shop. But you're not going to get the one I have because I got the special edition... Super funky orange edition.
I don't want the fucking neon orange one that you
got. It's amazing. You want it.
But anyway, so we're here to thank the patrons, Steve.
I bought it at KDVE.
Did you?
Kaufhaus des Westens.
Des Westens.
Which is like, I don't know, the first supermarket in Europe.
I don't go into that part of Berlin. It's a bit too swanky.
I got the best customer service I've ever received in Germany, which is to say, I got customer service when I bought that thing.
Because you were going to spend loads of money. Did you see, the way I'm dancing around the actual number that you spent on your suitcase? I haven't mentioned it on the podcast.
I mean, go to Remova.com and find the cheapest one and take a guess.
Right. Anyway, so just a 2-minute exegesis on...
After throwing me under the bus?
Yeah. How's your week been?
I'm not rich, Ben. I'm just fancy.
Well, that's true.
How my weekend? Oh my god! Like, if you're gonna get sick during a board game convention in another country, I highly recommend that the illness begin on the first day of the con and start clearing up just as you're leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect
Sounds
timing.
Great.
Perfect
Sounds
timing.
Great.
I talked about this before, but I guess in an episode that these people may not necessarily listen to.
It's gone on the main feed.
Everything's on the main feed. You give away too much for free.
That's true.
This is not a way to get a Remova.
That's true. I mean, I am ever going to get a Remova.
I think maybe one of your listeners could possibly, you know, we could have a Remova sponsorship level.
What? They pay a lot of money to buy me a Remova?
Yeah, send Ben a Remova. If there's
going to buy me a Remova?
Maybe someone listening works for Remova and you get a freebie?
Oh, that would be good. If they could get a freebie.
Yes.
I'd feel uncomfortable if someone spent a lot of money on a Remova.
No, you wouldn't. You'd be fine.
First 5 minutes, I feel like.
I mean, what else would... Like, we have no idea who's listening. So let's say one free Remova suitcase.
Right.
Let's do two more. What are some other free things you'd like to get that are expensive?
Am I like one of those sexy influencers who put their Amazon wish list up on Instagram?
Yeah, exactly what's happening right now. Like,
Remova suitcase.
Imagine that you are already one of these people.
Yeah. I want a Remova suitcase.
It's like some kind of like expensive video camera.
I want a tower.
A tower?
So I want, Steve, I want... I'm not sure on the motherboard... But I want Intel i7 12th gen with a decent cooler. I want a 3060 Ti.
Can you buy these off the shelf? Because I don't think you should expect someone to like assemble this for you.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
although you do have a lot of nerds who listen to this.
Computer John might be listening.
Like, what percentage of the people listening to this right now are likely to be nerds?
Some. I mean, I'm not a nerd.
Build Ben a PC. Don't make him... Do you really think that Ben should be building computers? Do you want that to happen? Honestly, if you're listening to this right now, you care about this content and you want it done right, please, please, for the love of God, let Ben build a computer. Send him a computer.
Anyway, enough of me
tower.
Blogging stuff.
So Remova, tower PC. Number three. What's number three?
The new Nintendo console when it comes out.
Is there going to be a new one?
There will be. It hasn't been announced yet.
Is there scuttlebutt about it?
Well, people are talking about it. They're saying that the Switch can't go longer than a couple of years.
So. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so next Nintendo, whatever.
Next Nintendo console, yeah.
Okay, so if anyone out there works for Nintendo, I mean, it's a games company. It seems likely enough.
Exactly. I imagine... what's his name? Works.
Can you please describe for the listeners... Name? My friend?
No. What's his name?
Oh, Miyamoto.
Shigeru Miyamoto. I assume he's a listener.
Yeah, probably. I want you to describe for the listeners what Five Games for Doomsday, the video game, would be like if it were on the original NES, an 8-bit console video game.
So you like walk around and that.
It's a side-scroller?
Side-scroller, of course.
Okay.
You've got to go in every pub.
Okay.
And it would just say pub in that 8-bit.
Okay. What are the controls? Like, can you jump?
So, you go into the pub and you come out of the pub.
Yeah.
Then you've got to stop getting knocked over.
What do the buttons do?
Like, one is like...
You're the character, right?
Yeah, like one's the puke button.
Okay.
One's the wet yourself button.
There are only two buttons, right?
So it's like Frogger.
Okay, can you jump?
No, you can fall over.
Okay, you walk out of the pub and fall over?
Yeah, okay. And puke and piss yourself.
But the buttons make you... So you're doing that on purpose?
Yeah.
So wait, one button, you puke, one button, you piss yourself?
Yeah.
How do you stop from falling over?
You can't.
Sounds like a real shit game.
Top game.
So if there's a nerd out there who knows how to create like 8-bit retro games, like Tim Kulinich.
Does he do 8-bit retro
games? I assume he can do anything after like the work I've seen from him lately.
That's true.
Like someone out there, Tim, if you know someone, let's see a Five Games for Doomsday 8-bit retro video game that basically functions as Ben just described. I don't think you're going to get past the first pub. I hate to see what level 9 is like.
All right, so our gate has come up on the board, so we've got to get through these names quick, Steve.
All right, I mean, I think we still have plenty of time.
So, yeah, I'm adding a bit of drama to the podcast.
Okay, hurry up.
So, you're going to do the nicknames?
Great, I love doing that.
So, Ben Poet.
That's you, isn't it?
No, it's someone called Ben Poet.
Ben Warrior Poet.
Oh, that's very good.
It's a good one, right?
Andy Greaves.
How many are there?
He's already had a nickname. It's like five or something.
I mean, Andy Greaves is already like a sentence.
His nickname was Mr. Greaves.
Yeah.
After the Pixies song.
Yeah.
You've got to give him a new nickname because he's upped his pledge.
You must have given him the Mr. Greaves
I did,
nickname,
yeah.
Right? So Andy Greaves. Andy the Reaper Greaves.
That's very good. So, someone...
How many more are there?
Like a couple. Fucking come on.
Oh, man.
Like, someone... I don't know who this is.
Yep.
I've got a feeling he's been on the show a couple of times, but a kind fortress has upped the pledge.
Mmm. Isaac, not now. Isaac, we'll talk. Go set up the game. Yeah, yes, we'll play Saikatsu again. Jesus Christ!
All right, what are we gonna? What nickname are you gonna give Kind Fortress?
I was gonna give him the nickname.
I think that fits. All right, Federico Latini.
Do I know Federico Latini?
No.
Federico Grand Latini.
And Muffin Puppy.
Muffin Puppy. Muffin Puppy. Muffin Top Puppy. I think it works both ways.
Brilliant. So, we're going to go to... I'm going to go to an interview now.
You're going to throw to the man in the field?
Exactly. Otherwise, we're going to miss our plane.
News!
So, I'm honored to have here on the news show the world-famous game designer Isaac Shalev, and we're here to talk about a couple of things that have happened in his world. Isaac, thank you for coming on the news show.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So, first thing is, you've entered into a partnership with Grand Gamers Guild for a couple of games. One has been announced, and one is about to be announced, I think. Can you just tell us sort of how you came into contact with Grand Gamers Guild and why you think they're a good person to work with?
So, I met Mark a long, long time ago, and he was at the time running Grand Gamers Guild before it was even a publisher, when it was an organization devoted to convention services. And so if you were a publisher and you wanted to bring a game to a big convention like a Gen Con, and you wanted some assistance with having people teach and demo the game, maybe more than you could assemble kind of staff to do so, you could contract with Grand Gamers Guild. And so that's how I initially met Mark. And then he started Grand Gamers Guild as a publishing concern. So really, from the very beginning and from some of his earliest games, I've at least been involved. And he did a game called Unreal Estate, which I helped out a little bit on the two-player mode. And that was also designed by Jason Slingerland. Over time, I've continued to get to know Mark. And what I've been so impressed by is that Grand Gamers Guild continued to make bigger and bigger games, and the quality and the attention to detail and the art and the presentation of those games has similarly kind of kept raising the bar. And I was so impressed with what he was doing that I thought, I got to find a way to do a game with Mark. And so I actually went back to Unreal Estate and to Jason's design and thought up a way to maybe bring that family style card game into more of a Euro game that would attract the same kind of players who were playing things like the Artemis Project or Endeavor. And so that was the pitch for what became Tir na n'og.
So can you tell us then about Tir na n'og? What is it? What is it thematically? What is it mechanically? And what makes it a good game?
Well, I mean, I'll take that last one first. I think what makes it a good game is, of course, its illustrious designers.
Well, indeed.
Yeah, so Tir na n'og is, it means the land of promise or the golden land. And it is from Celtic mythology. And the game is about sending out your storytellers into the Celtic otherworld to journey, to explore, to encounter strange creatures, to see dazzling landscapes, and to come back and write a saga about what they've seen. And so mechanically, what you're doing is you are sending out your storytellers as though they were workers in a worker placement game, and you're putting them into the other world, which is a grid of cards. And you're placing them between cards, so that ultimately you can pick into your hand one of the two cards that they're straddling. And this is a straddle draft. If anyone has played Spirium, you'll remember this is a very simplified version of that Spirium straddle draft. When you get those cards, you're going to then play them into your tableau, into your saga in front of you, and you've got three rows in your saga. So you're like telling three different stories there. And you're going to score points based on how well they fit, how well they match the requirements that saga, that that specific tale wants. So it's it plays 1 to 5. Shout out to John Brieger for developing the solo mode on this. And also a lot of credit to John for the theme, because this wasn't the original theme that we pitched the game with. The original theme was a kind of, you know, fairy tale village. And John brought Irish and Celtic lore into this and developed the world of Tir na n Og. And also just want to shout out Joe Hopkins, who's done a phenomenal job on the development and really, really helped us refine and correct and make the game as smooth as possible. But what you're getting in Tir na n Og is a 1 to 5 player game that plays in about 30 to 45 minutes. And it's probably somewhere in the King Domino to Queen Domino weight. Something that if you like drafting games, if you like tableau builders, you're going to really enjoy.
And so, you know, both you and Jason Slingerland are credited on the box. How close did you work together on this game, and how similar is this to Unreal Estate?
So Jason and I worked pretty closely together, especially at the beginning. You know, I reached out to him, first off, just for permission. Can I work in the world that you created? Can I work from the game that you created? And he was very eager and excited, and we got to sit together. We actually met together at conventions and were able to play test together. So we worked pretty closely together to build the frame and put in a bunch of content. And then I started working more closely with John and then Joe as we went into the development cycle. The game is nothing like Unreal Estate, really, and that was kind of the intent. Unreal Estate is a family weight stock game, and so this has nothing to do with those mechanisms. What my initial inspiration was that the art was really wonderful, and I thought, well, it's a shame, you know, the kinds of gamers that are coming to Grand Gamers Guild today are different from the ones that were coming when Unreal Estate and Stroop were the leading products. And so we're not selling them. I was at UKGE helping to staff the booth and noticed that we just weren't reaching that audience that was coming to buy Endeavor with Unreal Estate. And I thought, well, it would be wonderful to be able to bring that back to them in a package that they were interested in. In the end, because we went down the retheme, we're not reusing the very, very, very good art that I really love. But fortunately, Marlies Behrens is our artist, and she has made spectacular new art. And Bridget Indelicato is our graphic designer and our art director. And so we have a fresh package, a fresh set of illustration, a fresh artistic vision for the world of Tir na n Og.
And also, we've been talking for a while now about an older design of yours and sort of its misadventures in finding a new home, and you've decided to make that new home Grand Gamers Guild as well. And this is Seikatsu, which is a which is an abstract game using the position that the player sits at the table. So give us a brief sort of sum up of how you've got from your initial publisher for Seikatsu to now working with Mark at Grand Gamers Guild on this.
So Seikatsu is a game that is a tile layer. It's for 1 to 3 players, and it's, like you said, something that plays with the position that players sit at the table, because each player has a perspective on this hex grid. And so if you've ever looked at a hexagon as closely and carefully as I have, with the same attention and loving detail, you'll notice that it has 3 axes, right? There's 3 different ways that you can look across that hexagon. And so Seikatsu was built around that idea of trying to create rows of flowers, but from your perspective, while matching to flocks of birds. So every tile has a bird and flower on it. Now, we had initially signed it with IDW, and this was way back in, I think, 2016 or 17, something like, well, we probably signed it in 16 and it came out in 17. And IDW has since departed the board game industry entirely, and so we got the rights back. And when we got the rights back, we were thinking about, what do we want to do next? Seikatsu had been a reasonably successful game, and we had the opportunity to see it published in several foreign editions, a couple of US editions as well, including a different art version called A Pet's Life, which was really gratifying to just have the opportunity to see this game kind of get a little bit of build out, kind of get a little support throughout the world. But ultimately, IDW was in its kind of death rattle, and wasn't putting marketing behind the game, and really wasn't trying to build out long-term value for the game. And so I thought there was a missed opportunity, and wanted to see the game go to a publisher who could really embrace it and view it as an evergreen game that they could really build on over the years. So that was our mandate, really, was to go and find a partner who shared that vision. And we reached out to a lot of people. We actually spent a good amount of time working with the publisher to build a product vision. What should this new edition look like? Should it have the same price point and components? Should it be different? Should the rules change? You know, and really kind of got into it. But ultimately, that relationship kind of fell apart under mysterious circumstances. I mean, to be honest, we just sort of got ghosted, and not sure why to this day. After that experience, I kind of looked back and I said, you know, the one partner that I've been working with for a long time now, and I've always had a good experience with, and who has a good eye for games and produces them at a high quality, and who has an audience for this kind of game, is Mark Spector in the Grand Gamers Guild. Why don't we work together, you know, and spend a couple of years on a couple of games, really trying to put something lasting together? And so I'm really, really, really gratified and excited and thrilled to announce that Grand Gamers Guild is going to be publishing Saikatsu. We've signed our contract. We've started doing the work. It's probably going to be a couple of years before it comes out. But I am beyond thrilled to be working with Mark in this way again.
So you kind of mentioned it there, but so when can we see Tirna na Nog? When can we see Saikatsu?
Tirna na Nog is coming to GameFound at the end of March. And if you go to grandgamersguild.com, it'll be on the banner. You can go over and see the GameFound campaign and click to get notified, or go to GameFound. You can search for Tirna na Nog. It's T-I-R-N-A-N-O-G. So you can go there and sign up to get notification. There's already about 2,000 people signed up, so we're very excited that we're going to have a pretty solid launch, and we hope you'll join us. I think the official date is like March 20.
Nice.
Yeah, so just on any of those days, come check it. We have no official date for Saikatsu, but I think 25 is the earliest that I would imagine that it will be available, which gives us 2 years to kind of continue to have an excuse to come on this show and talk about stuff.
Brilliant. Well, famed game designer of legendary renown, Isaac Shalev, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
News.
So I'm delighted to have on the news show the head honcho at Dice Hate Me Games, Chris Kirkland. Chris, welcome to the news show.
Thank you. It's good to be here. All new format.
So we're here to talk about something you've got coming out on Kickstarter very soon, and this is Milkman. So before we sort of talk about the origin of the game and so on and so forth, can you tell us what Milkman is?
Well, Milkman is a game that is set in 1950s America, and it is kind of at the height of when, of course, here in America, we had milk deliveries from local dairy farms and things. But at its core, it is a dice and delivery game. So essentially, you're running your own dairy farm, and you're using dice each turn to perform actions, whether it's to improve your dairy farm, or to use your truck to make deliveries, to load milk onto that, make deliveries to clients and customers, or to actually get customers from a list of things that are on the table there. But the thing that's cool about Milkman, essentially, though, is that you never have a downtime. Even when you're not the primary player, you're still rolling dice to use. It's just you have more dice at your disposal on your turn. So that's essentially what Milkman is all about.
So
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Dice Hate Me is a company that sort of, their USP is Americana. When this game was brought to you, was it set in the 1950s, or was it in some nondescript time? To what effect has Dice Hate Me and you particularly had an influence on the theme of this game?
Well, it's interesting because I've been able to see the game since its early development, because it's designed by a friend of mine, Josh Mills, who lives in Durham, which is just basically the town over from mine. And so in early development, progress and development on it, I was able to see it from its earliest iterations. He didn't really design it with me in mind. I mean, of course, he had me in mind whenever I would check it out, but it was kind of a nondescript time. But actually, at the same time, since it was, you know, milk deliveries, it was a milkman, you have a milk truck, things like that, it just made sense that the time period of when it was. And of course, because whenever I started to see the development and decided I wanted to sign it, it came to me naturally. Like, as Americana, it was going to be post-World War, the baby boom. The milkman, the height of the milkman in the 1950s.
And so this is the first title in a kind of relaunch of Dice Hate Me, since Dice Hate Me was independent, then became part of Greater Than Games, and is no longer part of the Greater Than Games, and this is sort of the rebirth. Why is Milkman so good to be that sort of first title back in the gaming world?
Well, it's interesting because it's just been there for so long. You know, I signed Milkman over 5 years ago, and it was one that I just simply wanted to, get into development with Greater Than Games for the longest time. And for whatever reason, there are reasons, but I won't go into the full details of that. But with Greater Than Games, we were very slow about getting Kickstarters out, which was fine because we want to make sure that things were right. But Milkman was ready for a long, long time. So it was very important to me to be sort of the new brand and the new relaunch, also because it really does exemplify the Dice Hate Me aesthetic. Jumping into it as introducing a new game, but going back to the roots and introducing a game that is fully Americana and that is indicative of the type of game that I like to make. Also, it's pretty important too because it's at a good price range. It's not too small, it's not too big. I think that it's one of those that I like to call a one-hour wonder. So it's very attractive to casual gamers, but also it rewards experienced gamers as well, because everybody's on a pretty much even playing field.
And so, Dice Hate Me has a very. I remember I've got a few Dice Hate Me titles, and what excited me about Dice Hate Me was not just the mechanical elements of the game, but the aesthetics of the game, the way they did sort of evoke that sort of Norman Rockwell-esque sort of warm feeling. And so, who's on the case for Milkman? Who are the artists, the graphic designers, and what will people expect when they see it?
It is you nailed it right there when you said Norman Rockwell. So McCover artist is Quanchai Maria, a veteran of many, many, many board games. I've been a fan of his since, well, way back in the day. I've been championing him for 13 years now. He did art for a couple of the games of mine that just never came out, but I knew I wanted him on this one because I loved his style. I knew that he could emulate the Norman Rockwell style, which is exactly what it is on the cover. That's a milkman making deliveries. I'm not sure if you've seen that yet, but I'll have that out in preview and put on Board Game Geek before too long for people to really take a look at. It's awesome. And the interior was designed, the interior art was designed by Marlies Behrens. She's done... the past 3 years, she's really come on the scene. She started working really closely with Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback for their Roll and Write games. And I was doing graphic design for them. So I knew Marlies and I knew her work ethic and just her talent. So she designed the interiors, which basically is like the barns and the houses for the customers. And, you know, I gave her a sort of a lookbook of 1950s American architecture, mid-century modern architecture and design. And so it really evokes that era. She just knocked it out of the park. So with those two people combined, those two very talented artists combined for the interior and the exterior art, it's really come together and it does evoke that period and also really stands up to what you were talking about, that the Dice Hate Me aesthetic just embraces that. So I'm really proud of it.
And so since you've been, this is the first, as I said, the first project since you've been independent, and this is the first independent project you've launched in quite a while now. Yes. How has running a gaming company changed in that time, and what sort of adaptations have you had to make coming into this new project?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, since it had been so long, I mean, essentially it had been since 2014 that I was really doing everything myself. And even back then I had, you know, at least partially and part-time on staff with Daryl Louder. And of course, TC would help me with a few things. But primarily it was me, you know, running most everything. And I've had to get used to that again. You know, when I had Greater Than Games, we had a large infrastructure, you know, I could do some things, but then art direction and graphic design. And even sometimes, well, although I did run most of the Kickstarters, there were still some people to pass off and help with. Now it's very different now that I'm having to shift gears because I'm wearing all the hats. And so that's taken some time. Mostly what I've had to get used to is that it's taken me longer than I anticipated. Like I wanted to launch Milkman at the beginning of this year, and now it will launch in April. Not the end of the world, but when you're a small independent company and you're trying to keep your, you know, income coming in so you can afford to do more projects, you know, not exactly ideal. But, you know, that's just part of it. I mean, the people like to say growing pains. I had my growing pains way back in the day. I guess you call these regrowing pains. So those are some of the things that I've run into.
And what's the deal with Dice Hate Me now? So, I mean, I know it's a little impudent to be asking you about future stuff when the present one hasn't been launched yet. But
sure.
What's the sort of schedule? How many games per year are you hoping to kickstart and all of that sort of stuff?
Well, once I can get Milkman up and running and see how the Kickstarter goes, then I'll be able to gauge kind of what my time would be. Before I merged with Greater Than Games, my average for the year was 3 games a year, which I think is a, you know, a pretty good goal. It doesn't overtax me and it doesn't overtax the supporters of Dice Hate Me Games, the crowdfunding. You know, so I don't know if I'll reach that this year. I would like to at least do 2. I have after this one is going to be a little bit of a departure from the Dice Hate Me aesthetic, but only because it is another project that needs to be made because it's done. And that is the expansion for Fate of the Elder Gods. Mm. So, you know, it won't really follow. I mean, in some ways it does follow that Americana aspect and the fact that it's, you know, Lovecraft and that kind of era. But it's it's the expansion that we had finished 4 years ago, actually, I think, and has just been sitting there. And again, for whatever reason, it was done. We had the audience. Greater Than Games just did not pull the trigger for shuffling around different projects. And so co-designer Richard Launius and Daryl Louder and I have been talking and we've pretty much settled on some of the exact changes. And since then we've done play testing and it's gotten even better. All the art's done. The game is ready to go. So I just have to figure out the reimagining of how we relaunch Fate of the Elder Gods, both as an expansion project for existing customers, but then a reimagining of the base game because it's been out of print for a while. So that new people could come and get introduced to it and have everything in one box.
And so, you know, you said that you've had Milkman signed for 5 years. What has the reaction of the designer been to waiting that long to see the game finally made?
Yeah, Josh has been very patient. I mean, he, you know, kind of designed the game, you know, as part of a pastime and a hobby for him. He's very involved, of course, with our Game Designers of North Carolina group. But he, you know, he's an entrepreneur. He runs and manages video game production. So he's got a lot of things that he does on his plate besides, of course, you know, thinking about the game design and so on and so forth. Now, that said, you know, before the discussions of even getting Greater Than Games bought out, he did actually discuss with me and with Greater Than Games about possibly taking over the Dice Hate Me brand just as something that he could run himself because he loved the actual aesthetic and what Dice Hate Me stood for. Of course, those talks faltered on one side, and then, of course, we got involved with selling to Flat River Group, and I negotiated the return of Dice Hate Me to me. So, you know, he's been involved, but he's got so many other irons in the fire that he's just been very patient about it. And that's just his personality. He's a very easygoing and a very, you know, just great guy to work with.
So then give us the vital statistics. When is it up on Kickstarter? How much is it going to cost? And when, hopefully, can we get it on tables and play it?
Well, the timing originally was going to be at the end of March. That's just way too soon. So I have tentatively, and this is, I'm going to try to stick to this, April 25th, Tuesday, April 25th, will be the launch on Kickstarter. I have to, I'm still lining up reviewers. I've got my prototypes that I'm still constructing before I leave next week for spring break and Unpub. But, you know, that's kind of the timeline that I'm going for now. As far as price, I'm still getting quotes. I'm still working on quotes. I'm still seeing different options and, of course, breaking those out as we usually do into stretch goals to see how much we can add to the game. I'm hoping to offer it on Kickstarter for $30. Whether that would be, and again, this is another if, this may not necessarily make it to retail. If it only does so many units, I mean, obviously some of them will be sold into retail if there's a you know, not enough to fill a full order, but it's not going to be many probably. So people should probably jump on it when they can. Whether I could offer that for $30 in retail, I don't know. It might be closer to $40. It is, you're probably familiar with these terms, but some of the listeners may not, is a rooster. And so that is the different categories of our game, starting with rabbits, which are the smallest, monkeys, the next one, roosters in the middle. We have tigers that are a little bit larger, and dragons are the biggest. So this is exactly right in the middle for a rooster. About the same size as New Bedford and Compounded and previous titles that have been in those rooster boxes. So I'm hoping around 30. I'm still working that out, but I want to be very realistic and transparent with backers to let them know what the exact costs are. And I haven't really seen that very much done in any Kickstarter campaigns. Again, if I choose to launch a Kickstarter right now, I'm leaning toward that instead of GameFound. But what I want to be transparent about with the backers is telling them the exact cost nowadays of actually launching a project on Kickstarter. Because back in the day, you could launch with, you know, a dream and a smile. But now you basically have to have an almost completely finished product, which has a lot of upfront costs and things like that, that, you know, you need to recoup. So I want to put a whole section on that to talk about what is the actual cost of kickstarting a game. And I'm hoping that'll actually help backers feel the engagement and also feel, you know, knowledgeable about, yes, this is what they go, they may not realize.
Excellent. So if people want to see that image, they want to get more information, where can they go?
The best place for right now is to follow me on Twitter at DiceHateMe. I do have DiceHateMeGames.com. It is still in transition. I've had to pull back on the web store, which I won't get into the reasons for that on this podcast. But so that is pulled back just a little bit right now. But definitely follow on DiceHateMe on Twitter. And also, if you're not on BoardGameGeek, be on BoardGameGeek. Go to the Milkman has a page. Go to the Milkman page, follow that, and you'll see a lot of the updates for the images there as well. Also, if you do go to DiceHateMeGames.com, at the very bottom, there is a link to the newsletter, which I keep updating, and I will be sending an update out in about a week or two to let people know the behind the scenes.
Brilliant. Well, Chris Kirkman, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
News!
So, it's your favorite bit of the show, Steve?
Okay, let's get on with it.
This is where we do some...
what's our gate number?
34, Steve.
Okay, my number's 34.
It's between 1 and 19.
What's 34 divided by 2? 17?
17, is it?
17, stupid fucking system.
What do you mean? You love it. I'm going to go for number 3.
Wait, you're guessing as well? Why? Yeah. Why? It's not a competition.
No, but if one of us gets it, it's fun, isn't it?
No.
Number 11, Steve. All right. When was the last... Fucking hell. Fucking hell.
What?
From We're Not Wizards. When was the last time you laughed at something you shouldn't have, Steve?
Can you stop answering questions from We're Not Wizards?
He did put a lot of questions in.
The last time? I don't know, like 10 seconds ago, probably?
Yeah, so, you know... You know,
I mostly laugh at things I shouldn't laugh at.
Because that's what's humorous, right?
Yeah.
Transgression is funny.
Feeling superior to people, like Aristotle said, the ridiculous, the inappropriate, the obnoxious, people falling down, people farting.
So we've seen a lot. I remember reading...
Slander, scandal, vitriol.
I remember reading Shut Up and Sit Down's review of Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah.
Their main argument was that it's childish.
So they're against Cards Against Humanity.
Of course they are. And their argument was that it was childish to laugh at transgression for transgression's sake. Right?
Yeah. I miss what everybody does, though.
Well, firstly, it's...
Have they been to a stand-up comedy show?
Firstly, it's what everybody is. And secondly, so I have this theory about comedy. I think we... Did we have a row about it?
Probably. We have a row about just about everything.
But why I hate Ted Lasso. Why I hated The Good Place.
Oh, I mean, you know, you're a prick.
Yeah, I mean, you seem to think that me not liking Ted Lasso is an attack on you, but it isn't. I just think Ted Lasso is absolutely vacuous, unearned shite.
No, I just mean you're a prick.
Oh, no, definitely I'm a prick.
Yeah.
So
apropos of nothing.
So I think the funniest comedy, the comedy that really is funny, that really hits, that is not just... like Friends shit, which is very Friends, right, is born out of cruelty. Not necessarily sort of institutional cruelty, but if you look at The Office, the original Office that Ricky Gervais did.
Yep, brilliant show, very cringy.
Ricky Gervais's character... So Ricky Gervais...
But is it funny?
It is very funny.
I mean, I remember it being funny, but I also remember like feeling all this secondhand embarrassment.
He conceives that character out of cruelty, which, although you shouldn't laugh, is very funny. Arrested Development.
Yep. Very cringy.
All of the characters are monstrous. It's a cruel show.
Yeah.
In which people do cruel things. When Buster loses his hand, it's deeply, deeply cruel, but deeply, deeply funny. And that's funny. Transgression is funny. Cards Against Humanity, like
also,
it or not.
Also puns, and that show has a lot of puns.
So
Loose Seal.
You can be a prude or whatever.
Hermano.
Right, exactly. But you can be a prude or whatever.
You can't have a party without ice.
You can say, oh, these things are nasty and they're transgressive and they punch down. I mean,
yeah.
Cards Against Humanity doesn't punch down, it's just crass. And it may upset your middle class sensibilities.
But wait!
It's funny.
Like the funniest moments in Ted Lasso are the moments of cruelty, or like the genuine like asshole characters on that show are being assholes. Like the main soccer player who becomes a coach in season two, he's like constantly like you say fuck this, fuck you, fuck that. He's mean to people.
There's one asshole, and it's the crap character who's the thing. All the rest are genuinely sweet people inside.
Yeah, but they're not.
Need to unlock that.
Well, I mean, they're not that funny. Ted Lasso can be funny because he's so like over the top, like treacly sweet.
Ted Lasso. The writers of Ted Lasso, the characters in Ted Lasso, they enjoy smelling their own farts. Far too much for my taste. They fucking love their show and they love how pure and sweet and right on their show is. That is not what I like.
Well, obviously it's a matter of taste.
All right, so what are you going for now, Steve? One more question. we're having to do this a bit quick, unfortunately.
Can I stick with 17?
Yeah, sure. Number one, Steve.
Number one, Steve. I can go with that.
I think we've answered these two questions. Okay.
It's top question stewardship.
Okay. I'll go for Richard Norkel's question, which is actually number six, but I think it's the one we haven't
answered.
You're
going to randomly pick number six, even though the random number generator picked a different number.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
You've really
thought this through.
Whose show is this? All right, Richard Norkel. Do you have a favorite board game?
Very active on the Discord, I might add.
He's very active, Richard Norkel.
And by the way, listener, if you are not active... If you are not active on the Five Games for Doomsday Discord, you are missing out on the most vibrant, dynamic, interesting,
sexy
board game community on the internet.
It's better than Ted Lasso.
Go to fivegamesfordoomsday.com. Check out the pinned post. You get an invite right away. You're good at this.
You're getting good at this now.
Yeah, yeah. And you could be talking to Ben and me right now.
Think it's better than Ted Lasso?
Yes. I mean, anything is better than... Wait, what?
So, Richard Norkel asks, do you have a favorite board game store or cafe in Berlin? What is it like?
What is it like? I mean...
I think ours is our favorite, but we both have the same one, right?
Yeah, I mean, there aren't... Well, I guess there are a couple board game stores in Berlin. I've always gone to Brettspiel Geschäft, which is in my neighborhood and is, I think, the best of the ones I know about.
No question, the best board game shop in Berlin.
It's the first one I discovered.
Quite new on the scene.
I think the guy who runs it is very nice. Yeah. It's new.
Well, compared to a lot of the board game shops I used to go to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 10-minute walk from my apartment. They've got everything. It's always interesting when you're walking by to go in there and browse around and look at things. It's typically not so crowded. It's well laid out and well organized.
And they've got really great games. And the thing is, I think genuinely he is a real gamer. So he knows what's
I've seen
good.
Him gaming at Berlin Brettspielcon.
Right.
You know, you can talk to him about games. He'll tell you the truth about a game. Like, he won't just sell you stuff.
The first game, when I bought Small World, I wanted some expansions for Small World. And I went on the internet and I found a board game shop in Berlin. And I took the S-Bahn across. It was just when I moved into Berlin. And I took it across the city because it was quite a lot far away from me. And I went in and I bought these Small World expansions. And it was very exciting because I just got into the hobby. And I went back to the shop recently. And the shop is an unmitigated disaster. It is just games piled upon games. You can't get through the aisles. And it's a really sad thing because I always quite like that game store. And you've been there, and that's Morgenwelt.
Yeah, I mean, I go there once in a while just to see if anything has changed.
And it's an absolute disaster. It's a real shame. They don't seem to sell anything, and they don't seem to give a flying fuck about the customer experience.
I mean, I have a feeling that there are some real gems buried under the pile if you want to do some board game archaeology. But, I mean... It's like worse and worse every time I go in, so who can really be asked? It's easier just to buy stuff online.
And then when they were charging double for an Arkham Horror expansion, €26 instead of 13, I just went, sorry, my relationship is over with these dickheads.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, so we have Brettspiel Geschäft, but there's also like Spielbrett.
Spielbrett is fine. I bought
it's
nice.
And there's Spielwiese, which is more of like a board game cafe. I went there once and like I have no use for it, to be honest.
There's a lovely board game cafe in a part of Berlin called Moabit.
Yep.
And it's really nice and I went there once and we need to go back because it's genuinely lovely.
There's another small board game shop in my neighborhood. We walked by once, like very German. It seems like more oriented toward card games like Magic the Gathering.
I've passed that one.
Yeah, like I don't even remember the name of it. Haven't been back. But no, like Brettspiel Geschäft, if I need a friendly neighborhood board game store, that would be the one. I will buy a game there if I discover it there because I think that's fair. But also, I tend to buy games that I hear recommended from like the Geek Market, or I'll buy them at Essen or the flea market at Berlin Brettspielcon. I can't even remember if I bought a game off of Amazon. Maybe never.
Well, this is an invitation going out to all the listeners. We're just about to go because we don't want to miss our plane. But this is an invitation to all the listeners. If you're ever in Berlin, give us a call and we'll take you there.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Games for Doomsday news. To listen to past episodes, you can go to 5gamesfordoomsday.com, or to back the show, you can go to patreon.com/5g4d. So, join us again next month for some hot and spicy 5 Games for Doomsday news.